Division says they're not bringing civil rights charges against the agents who killed U.S. citizens in Minneapolis. We have 20 seconds. Your final thoughts.
When you have an agency killing people, executing them, lying about it, and then talking about investigating themselves while operating with impunity, you know exactly what is happening. ICE needs to be abolished. DHS needs to be dismantled. And we need to bring justice for every single person being experiencing the harm, the chaos, and the terrorizing in every community in this country.
Illinois Congress member Delia Ramirez speaking to us from Chicago. We want to thank you so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Makhwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York, 88.3 WRCT Radio, Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh, and 89.5 FM Bush Radio in Cape Town, South Africa, the mother of community radio. You are listening to the One World Community Radio Show, and we are delighted that our guest today is Miss Julie Halston. Julie, thank you so much for coming on our program today.
Well, it's great to talk to you, Ricky. And of course, being a Hofstra grad, it's doubly a pleasure.
Yes, Hofstra alumni, Hofstra pride. Very big on the Hofstra pride here at Hofstra.
Yes.
You are here today to speak to us about not only your work in the arts, but your work with the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation. Explain to people who don't know what pulmonary fibrosis is, what the foundation is, and your relationship to it, if you don't mind.
Yes, of course. Pulmonary fibrosis is, at this time, an incurable disease that affects the lungs. What happens is the air sacs of the lungs has fibrotic tissue in it, and what it does is it dries up the lung sacs, and you cannot breathe. Right now, there is no cure. However, in the last number of years, there have been some good developments. One of them is that there are drugs now on the market that actually slow the progression of the disease. And the other thing is that you also can get a lung transplant. I did not know anything about lung transplant, but in 2008, my late husband was diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis. And here's the other thing. Many times they don't know what the cause is. It's called idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis. They did not know the cause. My late husband was not a smoker. He was not working around asbestos or any of those kind of toxic chemicals that we do know are very bad for the lungs. So idiopathic means no known cause. So it was really quite a surprise to us that he was diagnosed with this terrible disease. However, he was very lucky. He did receive a lung transplant on our 18th wedding anniversary, actually. And he lived another 8 years. And that those 8 years were really quite a gift. So you can imagine, ultimately, he was able to live the normal lifespan of a male. He passed away at the age of 77. But we were very, very grateful that he got that lung. We also urge people to donate their organs in their wills or to register with, you know, their local donation outlet so that you can pass on the gift of life to other people if you, you know, happen to pass on. Anyway, there are currently more than 250,000 Americans currently living with pulmonary fibrosis and other interstitial lung diseases. And they're often difficult to diagnose, Ricky, because sometimes people have the same kind of symptoms as someone with asthma, for example. So they go to a doctor, a pulmonologist, they get an x-ray, and they might have a cough, and they say, oh, you have asthma, we'll put you on asthma medicine. Well, what happens is x-rays don't always detect fibrosis. You need to get either a CAT scan or an MRI. And if the pulmonologist does not order that test, it's not diagnosed. And by the time it is diagnosed, it's too late to do anything very meaningful sometimes. It's important that people understand that if they are experiencing shortness of breath or a dry cough, that they ask to get an MRI or a CAT scan, because then they can really see a detailed image of a lung. So it's important.
If you could kind of touch on, because you were talking about how you dealt this experience with your own husband, if you could kind of describe seeing a person day to day deal with the disease and the toll. And we also should mention, just in like a lighthearted sense, you met your husband on the air as an entertainment reporter.
Correct.
Instead of like out of a movie.
Yes, it really was out of a movie. I was doing a one-woman show. I was also in an off-Broadway show written by Charles Bush. And it had gotten a lot of press. And the publicist who was handling these shows, our dear friend Sam Rudy, who, by the way, just got a kidney transplant. So transplant is very much in my life, suggested to Ralph that he come down and see this actress in these shows. And he thought they were really great. And he said, oh, I'd like to interview her. And that was it. We kind of fell in love on the air. So it was a real, it was right out of, you know, something like a Nora Ephron movie. Anyway, what happened was a friend of ours had passed away from pulmonary fibrosis at the same time that Ralph was getting on the list to get a lung. They were very close. They used to go to the theater a lot together. And we were all very shocked that our friend had passed from a disease that we had never heard of. So we decided to do a little tribute to him. And I thought, well, he loved Broadway. He loved Broadway performers. So we put together this show at Birdland, which is a, you know, wonderful club in New York City. And we had some of his favorite performers perform. And we raised some money. And lo and behold, who showed up at the last minute but Liza Minnelli. And she, of course, you know, the crowd went wild. And we raised some money. And it was Ralph who said, we really need to do this, like every year, to raise money for a foundation we had never heard of called the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation. And this foundation is the premier foundation that helps and works with doctors, clinicians, researchers, patients, caregivers, and it is the premier foundation for people struggling with pulmonary fibrosis. What happens is you really lose the ability to breathe. And to see someone struggling with PF, as we call it, PF, frequently they have to go on oxygen. Sometimes they have to go on a lot of oxygen. It's very difficult to walk sometimes with people with PF. Also, my late husband was not a smoker. He was not around asbestos. You know, all the toxic materials that you would think would cause this, they never found out what caused it. So that's also, you know, mysterious and scary. They do think there is a genetic component because we have seen that people with pulmonary fibrosis frequently have had family members. So one of the things we're doing is trying to get a genetic marker that would allow people to understand if they are at risk at developing the disease. So it's very difficult to watch someone struggle to walk, to breathe, to just do daily activities. Fortunately, because of the work that doctors, researchers, and the foundation is doing, we are making strides. There are drugs on the market right now that help slow the progression of the disease down, which is helpful to people. They can live longer. But right now, the only thing that will ensure some real longevity in your life is to get a lung transplant. But let's face it, getting a lung transplant is not a walk in the park. It involves a lot of work. There is always the possibility that your body could reject the lung. We are lagging behind other countries in donations of organs because I think a lot of people are very afraid. They don't also want to think about death or whatnot, but it really is the gift of life. And I'm always urging people to consider donating their organs so that when they pass on, the gift of life can go to someone else. And we were very lucky. We got the gift of life. And my husband lived another 8 years. He walked his youngest daughter down the aisle. He saw the birth of great-grandchildren. We traveled all over the world. It was really the gift. It was a miracle. So I would urge people, if you have a dry cough, for example, if you are struggling with breath, to not only go to your regular pulmonologist, but frequently they don't pick up the disease on a regular x-ray. It's only through a CAT scan or an MRI where they can do a little more detailed imaging, where they could see the fibrotic tissue that is in the lung. And that fibrosis is what is preventing people from breathing, because it dries up the lung sacs. So it's a very insidious disease. We obviously are working so that we could eventually have a cure, but it can be very misdiagnosed. For a long time, Ralph just thought he had asthma, so he was taking asthma medicine, and that really wasn't helping. And it was only when his lungs were very seriously riddled with fibrotic tissue that we found this diagnosis. It was very difficult. But like I said, he was lucky. He was one of the lucky ones. So I urge everyone who has any kind of lung issue to get a detailed image of their lung. That will help a doctor diagnose correctly. So we are raising money. That's one of the things I do every year. I bring the Broadway community together with the pulmonary fibrosis community, and we have a big gala, and we have all the Broadway performers performing, and we raise money to help with researchers and doctors and patients and caregivers to help them live with this disease and also work toward a cure. So we're very, very excited about all the different ways that people are working toward helping those that are struggling with the disease. And we get amazing talent. I think around the world they have these shows, America's Got Talent. And one of the finalists was this wonderful singer named Daniel Emmett. And he is going to be performing this year on March 9th. At our benefit. So we're very excited about having Daniel Emmett. A lot of people in the United States know who he is. We're excited, and we get a lot of amazing Broadway voices. So, and we've been doing this for 16 years, and we've raised millions of dollars for this particular cause. I know there have been families. I know someone who's uncle died of the disease, whose father died of the disease, and whose brother died of the disease. Now, luckily, he is fine, but, you know, that does seem to run in families.
So basically, Julie, you're saying that you're using art as a way of awareness, especially about the disease.
Correct.
And I want to know, how is it working out? For example, for me, I didn't know about it. I had to do more research on it. But yes. Now I want to know, in terms of awareness, is it working out for US? And also, how is the disease also being recognized worldwide?
Well, good questions. First of all, it is working out, Kusi. For many years, if someone was diagnosed with pulmonary fibrosis, it was really just a death sentence. And usually people with the disease, for many years, they would die within 5 years of diagnosis. Well, that is changing. People are living longer with the disease. And also, there are three drugs on the market currently that are helping slow the progression of the disease. So people are living longer. And a lot of times when you live longer, you can also get on the lung transplant list. And this is going on all over the world. We just recently did a big summit, a big, big conference in Chicago, Illinois, just a few months ago. People from all over the world were there. Over 1,000 people came to this summit. So what's happening is doctors are sharing information with each other people are doing research. One of the things that I love about Broadway Belts, our, you know, our gala, is that it brings together researchers, doctors, patients, caregivers, and artists, and we raise money so that all this money can go toward helping people not only spread awareness, but also do research to help the patients live better and live longer. And one of the things we're very involved in is also getting oxygen to people. You know, frequently what we are finding out is that it's very hard for patients to get their oxygen in a timely manner and to get enough oxygen. Depending on the severity of the disease, some people need, you know, quite a bit of oxygen to get through their day. So it's very important that we all work together with our governments, with our healthcare professionals, to get oxygen to the patients. We do work with other people around the world. Our CEO, Scott Stasek, he goes around the world. He does conferences with many people. So this disease is known. And like I said, there is a genetic component, we think, and we're working hard to find a genetic marker so people who might be at risk can get the help they need.
So now we're in 2026, and as we've seen, the whole world is moving into Agenda 2030 about sustainable development being one, access to healthcare. So yes. when it comes to this disease, how expensive it is to maintain, and also access to medication, is it expensive? And also, if it's expensive, what ways the so-called countries that are called third world, if there is somebody who's diagnosed with it, what are other ways would you advise that for them to have access to medication?
Yes, this is now under discussion right now, because, for example, if somebody has a cough or if somebody is struggling to breathe, they might go to their regular doctor and they might get an X-ray, but sometimes pulmonary fibrosis does not show up on an X-ray. A doctor might not know what to do next. Sometimes you need to get an MRI or a CAT scan to really get a detailed image. Well, sometimes people cannot afford an MRI or a CAT scan, and it really does, you know, it's important your insurance plans cover these things. So one of the things that is something that we are really constantly worrying about is, can people get access? I was telling Ricky, we just did this huge summit in Chicago. We had over 1,000 people, and there were people from other countries. This is one of our big concerns, is that people are not getting the proper diagnosis or even the proper care. Now, you know, we don't know what the systems are in all the different countries, but for example, the disease does show up a lot in people generally, not always, but generally over 60 or 65. There are other cases where it may show up in someone younger, but usually people that are over 65 in America do have Medicare. Now, as we know, there has been much discussion about whether or not to cut Medicare or Medicaid. Currently, if you are on those programs, you know, you can get a lot of these tests and whatnot covered. But I don't know the systems for Europe, Africa, Asia. I don't know. But one of the things that I know a lot of doctors are concerned about is at least getting the proper technical support to even diagnose the disease correctly. So this is a big concern of ours as we go forward with our work with the disease. So it's an important component, Kusi. So we really don't know yet how it's going to, you know, all plan out in terms of caring for people. One of the things, if you do get one of the drugs that are on the market, there are plans that help people afford the medication. And we are working with these pharmaceutical firms, and we're trying to figure out ways where people can get the drug and get it in an affordable manner. So that is something that is very important, because, you know, if you have a drug that will help slow the progression of the disease, but you can't afford it, that's not going to be very helpful. So we are working. That's one of our big issues, is affordability. Now, obviously, if you get a lung transplant, that is a very expensive operation. Now, my husband had great insurance. He was also on Medicare. He was, he was 68 when he was diagnosed, but we were very lucky. We had great insurance, so we were able to get a lung transplant and able to afford the medications that you need to sustain yourself on a lung transplant. These are very, very expensive medications. However, many of the plans that we saw with people that also got a lung transplant, because you do become part of a community, let me tell you, they were able to afford the medications as well. And not all of them had a lot of money. So they were able to do this through Medicaid and Medicare. And that's why we're so concerned about cuts in Medicare and Medicaid, which are currently on the chopping block right now. So we're very concerned about it, Kusi. We really are. It means working with the government. And if the government doesn't want to fund things, then you might be out of luck. That's the problem.
Julie, does the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation, do you go to like the federal government in Washington, D.C.? Do you guys go on Capitol Hill?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That has happened. And we also, there are certain senators and assemblymen, assemblywomen, who are receptive to this. And the PFF, as we call it, the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation, does work with elected officials to help propose funding for these. And that's why we've also been working with, and we talk to, other lung associations, the American Lung Association, the Thoracic Society, because we need funding for all these things. So yes, we do. And we do write to our congresspeople. So that is something that we will continue to do. And that's one of the things that, one of the most important things that patients with PF need is oxygen. And we're very, very concerned that people are not getting the proper amount of oxygen. We're working vigorously to make sure that people get their oxygen. I have found, we worked with New York Presbyterian with Ralph's situation, and they were exceedingly helpful. And we also have found that social workers who work with the hospital, they have access to many different organizations that can help patients. They were very helpful. I don't know if the hospitals in Europe or the hospitals in Africa or the hospitals in Asia, I don't know where their standing is with pulmonary fibrosis. That is something that our CEO, I think, would like to get even more involved. And he has gone to a number of conferences that have doctors from around the world. So that there is a dialogue that is happening, and we want to continue that. There is research, I believe, being done in Europe about PF, and we need to know all the different advances that are being, and they're very, people are very good about sharing information, because everyone wants their patients to get the best help. But that is something that will, I mean, we're very concerned, obviously, with the 250,000 people in America that are struggling with PF and other interstitial lung diseases. But it's very important that news is shared and breakthroughs are shared with everyone.
Kusi, you mentioned something, because I was talking to Julie off the air, and we were talking about, I saw Julie in a play years ago on Broadway called Tootsie, and that play was very, very funny. But you mentioned something before about Kusi with the art, and kind of art being healing in a weird way, and raising advocacy for the awareness. You, Julie, you were saying to me when we were off the air, you took that job shortly after your husband did pass away from pulmonary fibrosis.
Right. So, and it was so healing for me, because I was with a community of people. They understood what I was going through. It was also a wonderful show. And it was so healing for me to go to work every night with these great people. We're all still friends. And because I was so devastated by the death of my husband. And listen, my husband lived an extra 8 years with the lung that he received. We were very lucky. It was a miracle. But ultimately, he passed away at the age of 77. But it was so healing for me to go to work every night, be with wonderful people, and feel the love of the audience. And just knowing that I was able to feel the love. And that was very, very helpful to me. And ultimately, what was really great was, ultimately, I did receive an Isabel Stevenson Tony Award for my work with the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation. And that helped, that Tony Award helped spread awareness all over America. I was on so many different radio shows, newspaper articles. There were, I think, some people actually in Europe who also found out about it. It helped spread awareness like you would not believe. I think we got something like 33 million impressions between radio, print, podcasts. So we were really, really lucky. That Tony Award helped really spread awareness to the disease. So this was a really big deal, because it really was able to spread awareness in a way that we didn't know we could, you know. So I'm very proud of that. And I dedicate it every year. We have something called the Ralph Howard Award. And that was my husband's name, Ralph Howard. We give an award every year to an individual who has spread awareness through generous donations, a commitment to community, a sense of mentorship. These were very important qualities that Ralph really espoused. So every year we give the Ralph Howard Award to a worthy recipient. So I must say, it's very, very moving. There are people generally who we give the award to frequently are people who have been very touched by the disease, a loved one, a mother or a brother or a friend have been touched by the disease. They understand what pulmonary fibrosis is. For example, Ricky, you might not know this, Kusi, but there is an incredible organization in New York called Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. And Ricky, Tom Viola was the head of that for many, many, many years. He's a friend of mine, and he was the one who also helped me put together. He told me how, what it is to put a gala together. It's a lot of work. But anyway, Tom knew my late husband, but he also lost a very, very, very dear friend of his to pulmonary fibrosis, a guy that a number of us knew named Scott Barnes. And so he was very affected by that. And so when we gave the Ralph Howard Award to Tom Viola, he was very moved because he knew someone directly affected with the disease.
So now, Julie, obviously, somebody in your family battling pulmonary fibrosis to a point where they lost their lives. Throughout all that, including with you personally, in terms of doing some research and all that, before you even knew about what was your state of mind before you even knew about the PF, and also now, how much of knowledge have you gained regarding the PF disease, and also how did you even gather that information to a point where now you're being recognized by big awarding competition, or should I say events?
Right.
Yeah. Can you take me through the journey?
Yes, the journey. Well, I'll never forget it, to be quite honest. My husband had a cough for a while. We thought maybe he had his asthma again. Again, he never really had asthma. But one day, he was walking up the subway stairs, and he could not walk up the stairs. He was struggling to walk up the subway stairs, and actually someone had to help him. He thought he was having a heart attack. He was really struggling to breathe. It just so happened that he was near our doctor's office. He somehow got himself to the doctor's office, and he almost collapsed right in the office. And they immediately started listening to his heart. They thought maybe he was having a heart attack. He wasn't. Then they listened to his lungs, and the lungs did not sound good at all. There was a rattling. There's a rattling listening to the lungs. And he said, I want you to go across the hall to a pulmonologist who happened to be in the building. And they did an X-ray, and they did an MRI, and they found that he had fibrosis, pulmonary fibrosis. And it was a very, then they called me and they said, we want you to be here to listen to this diagnosis. So I ran over there and they said, Mr. Howard, we regret to inform you that you have a fatal disease and your lungs are in not very good shape. And we probably are looking at maybe a year more of life. And the only way that you can live longer is if you got a lung transplant. Well, we had never even heard of a lung transplant. We were just so devastated. I can tell you guys, we walked home that night. I don't even think we spoke to each other all on the way home. It was the longest trip around the block from our house ever. Ralph has 5 children, and telling his children was just the most painful thing in the world. So the pulmonologist who gave us this terrible information said, look, I teach at New York Presbyterian Columbia. I will call them and see if you can somehow get on the list for a lung transplant. But you have to go through a lot of tests before they think you're a good candidate. So I had to turn down work because you really do need somebody who's going to be there for you. You can't really do this journey on your own. You need family and friends or some kind of caregiver to go through this with you. So I canceled certain jobs that I had, and we got on, we met with New York Presbyterian, and he had to go through many, many tests, testing his heart, his, you know, all his organs, his kidneys, his liver, his general health, what his diet was and whatnot. And it was a really rigorous situation. They also did a biopsy on his lungs to see if exactly it was pulmonary fibrosis, and it was. So he got on the list 2 years after he was diagnosed. So he was able to live that long, but they had put him on certain drugs before he actually got the lung. And that did help him breathe better. But he knew that if he didn't get the lung, he was probably going to pass away pretty quickly. And we got the call on August 9th, 2010, that a lung became available, and that was it. He got it, and he didn't have to use oxygen anymore because he was using a portable canister of oxygen to walk around, do his daily activities. He was still working as a newsman, but he was now working for Howard Stern in a more lighthearted capacity. He wasn't doing hard news anymore. And he got the lung. And like I said, it was a long journey. And it's a journey that requires a great deal of patience and a great deal of rigor. You really have to do everything that the doctors tell you to do. And it does involve possibly changing your diet a bit. It involves making sure that you have enough oxygen with you at all times. And that, again, goes toward insurance companies and hospitals and working with the professionals. So your life really does stop in a way so that you can get all these tests. You know, I mean, for example, there would be a day where he couldn't go to work because he had to have a slew of tests that day. But his employers were very, very receptive, and they were very helpful. This is something that I think generally people don't realize, that just getting on the list requires a great deal of stamina. However, when people are diagnosed with the disease, there are a number of drugs on the market that will help slow the progression of the disease, and that will help people live longer, so that allows them to maybe get on the list. So you see, it's a full-time kind of preoccupation because it is such a insidious disease, but It can work. It really can work. I don't know if you guys know the former Yankee baseball player, Bernie Williams. I don't know if, Ricky, if you would know. He played for the Yankees. His father passed from pulmonary fibrosis, and he works with us, and he's done my benefit many times because he plays the guitar. And this year, we have as one of the spokespeople the actress Laura Dern, whose mother, Diane Ladd, had pulmonary fibrosis. So she's one of the stars of all the Jurassic Park movies. We are lucky that we have these wonderful spokespeople for, you know, to advocate for people to become aware of the disease. Times, Kusi, people think they have asthma. But it is not asthma. It might be pulmonary fibrosis because some of the symptoms are the same. So it's important for people. Yeah, it's important for people to get a very a detailed image of their lungs. And sometimes x-rays don't go deep enough in imaging.
Exactly, Julie, because I was about to ask that. Is it the same as asthma or TB? But you've answered my question on that one.
Yes.
So now, Julie, I know that you're doing a lot of work, especially when it comes to advocating for PF, for people to know about pulmonary fibrosis. So now let's say somebody who's listening now, and maybe they reached 6 months ago, 2 months ago, a month ago.
Yes.
They recently heard about PF, and now maybe a member of the family or individual is diagnosed with it.
Yes.
What words of advice to deal with it? Because you had to go through all that alone and obviously doing some research. What is the advice can you give for somebody who's going through this for the first time?
Okay. Good question. I think the first thing they need to do is go, if they have access to a computer, and hopefully they do, either at home or at a library or even through a doctor office, they should go to pulmonaryfibrosis.org. And that is the website for the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation. And there is a lot of information on that website. It's pulmonaryfibrosis, all one word, .org. O-R-G, and they can get a lot of information from there. The other thing is that anyone who is having symptoms of fatigue, a cough, struggling to breathe, they should ask their doctors if they can get a detailed image of their lung, maybe through a CAT scan or an MRI, and to also listen very, very seriously and strongly to their lungs to hear any rattling. But a detailed image is really going to be the way to go. So they should ask there. And a lot of times, a general doctor, a primary doctor, will not have this information. They need to go to a pulmonologist, and they need to ask the pulmonologist to somehow get them to a detailed image of the lung. And that will reveal a lot of information for them and determine whether or not they have pulmonary fibrosis. So that would be, but I would tell anyone, and I do tell everyone, the first thing to do is to go to that website. There is so much information there. And there is also a hotline. They can actually call a number and speak to someone, and they can get even further information from that hotline. 844-825-5733. That's the number for the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation, and they can also go to, and they can talk to someone, and they can find out doctors, they can find out the names of the a care center that might be near them. There's all sorts of people at the foundation that can get them further help. But they do need to go to the website. It's very important. There's a lot of information there. One of the things that happens is people get so scared and upset, they don't know what to do next. And there is help out there.
Because we were talking about kind of the journey with Ralph as you were going through this.
Yes.
You speak about your event that we're going to touch on at the end. You kind of speak with like a purpose and kind of like a triumphant attitude, almost that you're very fulfilled by the work that you're doing with the advocacy. But I don't know what it was like to lose one spouse. But if there are people who are listening who have lost a spouse recently or in the last year or 2 years, whatever the case may be, What advice would you give to those people to kind of go out and, for lack of a better term, like see the sun again and find their purpose and kind of keep going on? Because I can't imagine it's easy.
It is not easy. And I was very lucky that I had family and friends and a community surrounding me, but it is not easy at all. And it is important to grieve. You know, it is. It's very important to grieve. But what one of the things that I was very inspired by was that Ralph himself said to me, you have to continue the work. He was very insistent that we continue the work. So that kind of gave me permission to keep going. And I will tell you that doing this event every year and raising money and meeting other patients and other caregivers and doctors and the companies that create these drugs that help the patients, it's very inspiring. And each year, we do make strides. We do get further and further along, and more people are living longer and living better than when this foundation started. So I have to tell you, it's very inspiring. Yes, I lost my husband, but I am seeing miracles every day. I can tell you, literally, I was in my dressing room last night, and someone that I met recently told me that his wife has pulmonary fibrosis. And I said, oh my goodness, now is she working with a hospital? Is she getting on the list? She got on the list. Well, guess what? Two nights ago, she got a lung. She's in recovery right now. As we are speaking, she is off oxygen. She's breathing on her own. And she even got up and did a little walk around, and she got a new lung. So it's a miracle. And she was diagnosed with a very severe case of pulmonary fibrosis. It was very difficult for her to do day-to-day activities. She now has a new lung. Her life is going to change. And that happened two nights ago. So it's very inspiring for me to know these stories, to meet everyone that I am meeting. I give my number to people. If they're struggling, I understand, but it's important to keep going. And if you have a loved one, and this happened to me recently too, if you have a loved one who cannot get on the lung transplant list, the most important thing is to make the patients comfortable and certainly not in pain. There is great hospice care out there, but everyone's journey is different, but we encourage everyone to keep going, do as much as you can, and surround yourself with people that understand what you're going through, and to create a community for yourself through family, friends, community. Like I said, social workers are very, very good at connecting people with different organizations. And the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation also has support groups. And the support groups are very, very helpful to everyone.
Thank you very much, Julie. It seems like you've went through a lot to a point where you worked so hard to make sure that no one else also go through the hardships that you went through. I'm loving it. Thank you very much for being advocate of peacefulness. Thank you very much for that journey.
Thank you, Kusi. Thank you very much. And I hope if you people should know about this disease, and hopefully as we not only work with doctors and whatnot, just to spread awareness is very important. Very important. So thank you. And thank you, Ricky.
And Julie, Broadway Belts, March 9th. It's live streamed also, so people could tune in that way, right?
Yes, it is. It's absolutely free. And live stream it on March 9th. It's an incredible night of talent.
And who's going to be there? Tell everybody.
Well, we're just putting together the talent now. But like I said, America's Got Talent. Daniel Emmett is going to be there. One of the stars of the Broadway hit Six is going to be there, Kelsey Watts. We've also got the amazing legend, Christine Ebersole, who has two Tony Awards. And a wonderful Broadway performer, Jelani Aladdin. So we're putting together our talent now. I host it every year. Yeah, they can either come to the live event at Sony Hall if you're in New York City. And if not, you can live stream it March 9th. But go to the pulmonaryfibrosis.org website in order to secure yourself a ticket for the live stream, because that is under Broadway Belts. Broadway Belts for PFF.org. Broadway Belts for PFF.org is how you can see the live stream.
Thank you very much, Julie. Any last words, though, before we let you go?
There is hope. There is much hope. And we are here to help you get through it.
Wow.
Loving
I think,
it.
Lucy, did we say wow in unison?
yes.
There we
well,
go.
Thank you, guys. Thank you
thank
very
you,
much.
Thank you, Julie.
All
this
right.
This is so wonderful.
Have
All
a
right.
great rest of the week.
You too. You've All been right. listening you to the One World Community Radio Show on 88.7 FM, WRHU, Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Our guest was Julie Halston. You've also been listening on 89.5 FM, Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and WRCT, Radio Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you all next time.
You've been listening to One World Radio, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio Hofstra University, Hempstead, New York. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you next week as we celebrate the power of radio in our one world. Tot ziens, jylle.
Stay tuned for the One World Community Radio Program on 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, 88.7 FM WRHU, Hempstead Radio, Hofstra University, 88.1 FM WCWP, Brookville, LIU Post, 88.3 FM WRCT, Pittsburgh, Carnegie Mellon University, 88.3 FM WVCR, Loudonville, Siena College, 98.1 and 105.9 FM WKZE Salisbury Red Hook, and around the world at WRHU.org. This is One World Community Radio, coming up next on your favorite community radio station.
Radio program, a collaboration between 89.5 FM Bush Radio, Cape Town, South Africa, and 88.7 FM WRHU Radio, Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York. Broadcasting from the Bush Radio Salt River Studios in Cape Town is host me, Lydia Mahwanana. Broadcasting from WRHU Studios in Hempstead, New York, are your hosts, Cody Millar and Andy Gladding. We welcome you to join us for the next hour as we celebrate the power of community radio, music, language, and culture. The world is a big place, but using the power of radio, we're bringing it right to your door. Now, Bush Radio and WRHU welcome you to the one world of community radio.
88.7 FM, WRHU Radio Hofstra University in Hempstead, New York, 88.3 WRCT Radio Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh, and 89.5 FM Bush Radio, the mother of community radio in Cape Town, South Africa. This is the One Road Community Radio Show. I'm Ricky Hubert in New York, and we are joined today by Bud Williamson. Bud, thank you so much for coming on our show today.
Hey, anytime, Ricky.
So, Bud, before we get into it, basically explain to the listening audience what your career has been like in radio. Give us a little bit of a Reader's Digest version, and we'll dive more into it during the program.
Oh, wow. I've been in radio since I was, I want to say, about 17. You know, grew up listening to radio. I grew up on Long Island, and I remember always tuning in and listening to radio, AM, FM. Moved upstate New York in 1973, 1974, and kind of a culture shock. And radio became my friend because where we went to in upstate New York was really rural compared to being in a development on Long Island. So I listened to the radio more up there. I'm in upstate New York now, and also put up some antennas outside so I can DX and listen to like Philadelphia radio, Binghamton, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre. And, you know, that was going through the 70s and the early 80s. Yeah, I'm old. So that's what really got me interested, is really that connection of one-to-many and that relationship, something that we've kind of lost today. So the first step, the first job I tried to get was to be on the air.
WRCT Pittsburgh.
And the hits just keep on coming.
Now, radio.